Welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. We're here after the opening round of the PGA Championship. And Rex, when we go through this recap for the opening round here at Aronimink, it actually may be easier to discuss the players who are not in the mix than talk about those who are, as we stand here right now. And there's still a couple of groups that are still left on the golf course. We have 48 players who are within three shots of the lead. That would be historical, Rex. The previous high was 47 players within three shots of the lead back at the 1993 Open Championship. It is as bunched as can be. When you do look at the seven players, though, who are among those tied for the lead at 367, the big name stands out, the player that you and I both picked to win this golf tournament. No surprise, world number one, Scottie Scheffler.
No surprise he's in the lead. I think there's a bit of a surprise of how he got there. His ball striking was average, I want to say. Certainly he drove the ball well. He had 13 of 14 fairways on this particular golf course. That's a feat. But it was his ball striking was clearly middle of the pack when it comes to approach play. I think he was 58th in strokes gained. It may be his best putting round, at least opening putting round of the year, because that was the one statistical issue that we had with him on Thursday. Look, it was hard to come up with a reason why he was struggling, or struggling.
Yes, he was losing strokes to the field, but it was minuscule.
It was, yes, but that was the one thing that stood out, and he picked up over three strokes on the greens today. I think that was huge. He made some big putts and had 123 feet of putts. So when Scottie Scheffler's doing that, he's going to end up on top of the leaderboard. I guess the only thing I'm surprised is he probably got the worst of the day's conditions. He went out late. I think he was the third to last group to get in. It was cold out there. The greens have been stepped on all day long. So I'll be curious to see how he comes back tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I mean, it's chilly. It's windy. We're going to talk about the golf course and how it played in a little bit. But as it relates to Scottie Scheffler's round, you look at what he has done in the opening rounds so far this season. Just two of his nine tournaments, he has shot a round, or began a tournament with a round in the 60s. First of those was American Express, went on to win in runaway fashion. Second was at the RBC Heritage, ended up losing in a playoff to Matt Fitzpatrick. So a very, very good start for Scottie Scheffler, 67. And you mentioned the driving, and that's what I wanted to get into here. Missing just one fairway, it wasn't by very much. Ended up making birdie on the par 5 16th hole anyway. We saw a lot of players, Rex, in the run-up to this championship. We talked about it on the preview podcast, sort of diminish Aronimink as just going to be a bomb and bash sort of test. One-dimensional in nature. Just go find it, hit wedge up on the green, and try to have a putting contest. If you look at historically the winners that have produced here, they've all been great putters. Scottie Scheffler making 120 feet worth of putts. Not so. It certainly looked like driving accuracy was a little bit more penal, a little bit more important than we've been led to believe.
Players. You're going to talk about players who were dismissive of this. How about gas bags? And I'm the first gas bag. I'll put myself right there in front of the list. And look, this was based on everything we thought we knew about this golf course. It's wide fairways, at least in comparison to other major championship venues. You think about how difficult it was going to be to miss a fairway. And then when I talked to Adam Scott last week, who'd made a scouting trip up here, he said that, yes, you can end up with a bad lie in the rough, but you're going to have to be really unlucky, and by and large, you're going to end up with good lies in the rough. That wasn't the case at all today. We saw some players just barely be able to hack it out. It almost seemed like it was U.S. Open type rough. Certainly you saw the greens. That was going to be the one defense that this golf course had. We can go to Bryson DeChambeau and what happened on the 11th green. If you end up on the wrong side of these Donald Ross greens, you're going to pay the price. This wasn't what we thought at all. I think I went 16 under as the winning score. I'm not quite sure where you were.
I was there too.
We're nowhere close to that, and it doesn't seem like we're going to. Now, the wind blew today, and talking with players, that certainly factored into it. It might get a little bit easier over the week, but we're not supposed to get any rain. I think it might be a wash on that front.
Yeah, look, we had, I think, about a quarter inch of rain overnight Wednesday night heading into Thursday. I think the biggest difference, and these fairways are pretty generous. It is pretty comfy off the tee, but when you do have crosswinds, all of a sudden a 35-yard wide fairway can shrink into 20 and 15, and if the golf course still is pretty firm in the fairways, in the greens, those play a little bit shorter. It's also interesting too, Rex, the dynamics of this golf course, because there is no graduated rough. Yeah. There is no step cut. You're either in the fairway or you're in these really muffy lies. I think a great example of that was what happened to Rory McIlroy on his very first hole, missed a fairway by less than a foot. He said he had one of the worst lies he has ever seen, ended up just trundling it down the fairway, ended up making a bogey. I think that at least partly explains the bunch nature of this leaderboard. Sure. I think we also need to give credit to Kerry Haig, who probably heard some of the player criticism about the setup. he was pretty selective in where he was putting those pins, putting them on ridges, mm-hmm. putting them on slopes. No player was saying that it was unfair or inaccessible. You really had to get a great shot to get rewarded, and that's the championship test.
I think Rory probably spoke for a lot of us and a lot of players who questioned how difficult this golf course was going to be, and he said, I got it wrong. He was the one that said earlier in the week that you can just stand on every tee and not really think about it. You could just bash away and then figure out how to try to get it close to the green. That clearly was not the case, starting with Rory McIlroy, and he admitted as much, but I don't think he was the only one. I talked a little bit about the idea that it was a tough winter up here. It's been a tough spring. The growing season hasn't been great. That's straight from Kerry Haight. Like, I spoke with him a week and a half ago, and he said, look, Mother Nature had not been cooperating, but we have seen really over the last few days how it seems like it's grown in, it's gotten thicker, it's gotten more penal. And the idea that now fairways matter, because you look at who's on top of the leaderboard, and Scotty's probably the perfect example there. You're right. Missing just one fairway was key for him today because, again, that ball striking, his iron play, which is normally what he leans into, that wasn't his sharpest part of the game. So I think if you get that the rest of the week, we're going to end up with a leaderboard that looks exactly like it looks right now, when you have so many players bunched together.
Yeah, when you and I are trudging around this golf course, because you have to be one arm length away from the rope line, the grass isn't necessarily long. It's not fescue. It's not like you typically see the hack out rough for the US Open. I think Oakmont was a great example. Like, that was legitimately long, 4 to 6 inches. This certainly is long in spots, but it's really dense and it's thick. The players are talking about like the thick blade of grass. And I was looking at it, and you're sort of envisioning what it would be like to hit out of it. And like players like us, I think we would have a really hard time muscling it out of there. You're not necessarily seeing that for some of the players here. They're still able to advance it. They're still able to trundle it onto the green. They're still able to kick it up into a greenside bunker. But it does introduce a little bit of variability, just what you're going to get when you do drive it into the rough. So I think you're going to continue to see Matt Fitzpatrick's and Colin Morikawa's and J.J. Spahn's when this golf course continues to firm up. Because, again, the next 3 days, it's supposed to continually get warmer. It's supposed to be a little bit breezy the next couple days. This place is going to bake out and make for a very, very fun test. You mentioned Rory McIlroy and how he had sort of miscalculated exactly what this test was going to be. Ended up shooting 74 for the first time in his career.
How did he assess his round? What was the way?
He called it poop. This is a family program, but he did say S-H-I-T when asked by the PGA of America moderator.
Gracious.
How he would sum up his round. For the first time in Rory's career, he bogeyed the last four holes, got on the bogey drain and could not get off, ended up shooting a 74. That was still two shots better than one of the other players that we talked about in the preview podcast, with Bryson DeChambeau. The only birdie of his day came on his final hole of the day, the par 5 ninth hole, his 18th hole of the day. Did not talk to reporters. I waited him out for about 45 minutes on the range, went through three buckets of balls, bashing it, clearly not comfortable with his swing. When he was missing left, thought he figured that out. All of a sudden started missing right. Absolutely could not figure it out. The bigger issue, though, for Bryson on Thursday wasn't even necessarily his ball strike. And that was, I think, mediocre or middling. It was his work around the greens. Got up and down just one of seven chances. Duffed a couple of shots there. Ended up losing a field worse 3.5 shots around the greens for big Bryson.
I mentioned number 11, and I would recommend anyone go and watch how Bryson played that hole, because he didn't speak with the media. He didn't speak with you. However, if he did, I'm sure he would have something to say about the 11th hole. And he's not the only one. I think that's the hole our colleague Paul McGinley tweeted earlier this morning, that he felt like that could be an issue this week. It's very severe. It's probably some of the most dramatic slopes we have seen in major championship golf in a long time, probably since Marion. As a result, they had to slow that green down. It's not the same. It's not quite as firm, quite as fast as the rest of the greens on the golf course.
And it's still plenty fast.
And it's still plenty fast. But if you look at the way Bryson played that hole, he just hit a horrible wedge shot in that bounced long and ended up putting himself in an impossible position. You can get angry at the green. You can get angry at your first putt that ran, I don't know, all the way off the green on the other side. But you put yourself in that position.
Yeah, look, there's no players, at least that I heard, at least that I talked to today, were griping about the unfairness of the golf course. I think that hole in particular is a prime example. I guarantee every caddy who is in this field for his player, and there's 156 man field, I guarantee you they have a big red X over the green on 11.
Yeah.
Smiley Kaufman did a great job on live from earlier in the week, sort of demonstrating the severity of those slopes, and it's absolutely dead. Having a really difficult time just keeping it on the green if you miss it long. So if you are a player who was approaching that green, and again, you're approaching that with just a wedge or a short iron, you should know that you cannot go long. What did Bryson DeChambeau do? He flew his approach shot about 5 yards too long, went over the back, and made a mess of the hole. Sausage fingers up. I can see it clearly. What do you have to say?
I'm looking at the leaderboard right now. Five of the top six players on the leaderboard birdied 11. So I guess my point is, if you hit a good, it's going to be a wedge shot. If you hit a wedge shot in and you control your spin and trajectory and you put it in the right position, you can go after it. But you're right. You can't go anywhere near where that red X is.
I mean, almost all of these par fours, there's a couple exceptions, but almost all of these par fours are scoring opportunities, are birdie opportunities if you put the ball in the fairway. I think it was thrown in sharp relief, Rex, by what we saw with some of the par threes and guys hitting lumber, guys hitting five woods, guys hitting three woods. Again, it was cold. It was windy. A couple of the holes were playing into the wind. I thought that was an interesting contrast as well. As many sand wedges as we saw into the green, the par threes, including the eighth hole and the 17th hole.
Eighth hole's the hardest.
Brutally difficult. Yeah, it's typically the eighth hole that plays as the most difficult on the golf course. 3.5, about a half shot over par in his opening round. I would expect that to continue for the remainder of the tournament. Rex, what are some of your biggest surprises that you saw on day one, either positively or negatively?
I would say on the positive side, John Rahm. He kind of came out, looked like he was going to struggle a little bit early. Didn't look like he had his best stuff. He holed out from the fairway on the second hole, which would have been his 11th hole of the day, and seemed to find something there and birdied his last two holes. And like, look, I think we've all been waiting for John Rahm to get back into major form since he went to LIV Golf. It's been the narrative since he joined that league. He simply hasn't played the majors the way he did beforehand for whatever reason, and we can sit and break that down. But I think that was on the pleasant surprise side. Brooks Koepka had another solid round, although he clearly wasn't happy with his putting coming off the golf course.
Almost one of the worst in the field, Brooks Koepka. Last I looked, he's 140th in the field of 156 in putting, really squandering so many great opportunities with his approach play. Again, he's the number one iron player on the PGA Tour this season. Feels like he's getting the absolute minimum out of each and every round because the putter continues to be a liability.
And on the other side, it's going to be Bryson DeChambeau, and I can't even say how surprised I am. I mean, you and I both watched him Tuesday, Wednesday on the range. He was in grind mode. He was almost in what one equipment rep told me looked like panic mode, where he had his whole team out there, and they've got the gadgets, and they're trying to figure out exactly what's going on. He simply didn't look comfortable the entire day on the golf course, and as a result, he played his way out of this tournament. He's going to have to play well on Friday just to make the cut.
Yeah, look, and Bryson obviously missed the cut in the Masters, which was on the back end of having back-to-back victories on LIV. You look at what he'd done last week at LIV Virginia, shot 19 into par, finished third. Now he's in danger of missing the cut in another major championship. It would be the first time if Bryson does not rally and does not make the weekend here. It would be the first time since 2017 that Bryson has missed the cut in two major championships.
I think there were nine club pros who beat him on day one.
Oof. Yeah. Not cringe. Ideal. Again, there are so many players within four or five shots of the lead, and Bryson now finds himself nine shots back. One thing I did want to mention about John Rahm, and I completely agree with everything you said there. There's been a very interesting dialogue, I thought, on social media if you were following along on Thursday. If you missed this, there's a new player code of conduct policy. It sort of popped up at the Masters. You remember what Sergio Garcia, when he was mutilating the second tee box during the final round, ended up getting a warning. It is going to be in effect, I believe, for all the major championships this season, but effectively it's a three-strike system. They can also go all the way to the end.
It can be a two-strike
if it's a serious infraction, but it typically is going to be a warning, a two-shot penalty, and then if the infraction is so serious, it is going to be a disqualification. Now, John Rahm on the seventh hole, I believe that would be a 16th of the day, sort of angrily took a swipe at the turf. He thought it was going to be what he called an air swing. Instead, put the glove on the ground, took a divot. The divot flew, and it smacked a volunteer in the face. He's fine. Don't worry about it. That's why
you should be laughing.
That's why I'm laughing. John Rahm was mortified at doing so. It was clearly inadvertent. It was clearly an accident. It was clearly a mistake. John Rahm rushed over to him, apologized profusely. Afterward, he was extremely apologetic. And said he even wanted to go find the volunteer so he could give him a present because he felt so bad. But there are other sort of examples of players exhibiting frustration. Justin Thomas was another example who threw his club, smashed his club, however you want to phrase it. Are all of those infractions now going to be looked at by rules officials and the PGA Rules Committee? Are we all of a sudden in the subjective business of, what was that, Is he just letting out a little bit of frustration, or is he essentially exhibiting conduct unbecoming of a professional?
What I don't want is this to come down to some sort of flagrant foul, one or two, like we've seen in the NBA. That seems like it's such a diluted line. No one really knows. It's a very gray area. You don't know. When, in the case of Justin Thomas, I think that's a great example. And no, I don't even think John Rahm.
Roy slammed a driver after errant tee shot as well.
I mean, JT threw the club out of his hand into the ground. I don't think that should have been a violation. But I sometimes feel like you get frustrated. Anybody that's played the game of golf understands that. And so I don't like the idea that in these particular events, and where so much is riding on the outcome, that now all of a sudden guys have to be worrying about the littlest things.
I'm completely with you. The stress is high, pressure is high, the stakes are high, emotions are high. I don't want to see a club slam all of a sudden. Here's a warning. And keep in mind, these are rolling penalties. So if you receive a warning in the opening round, and you have another temper tantrum on Saturday, all of a sudden you're being docked two shots. I don't like that at all. I think these should really be reserved for egregious acts of misbehavior. Sergio Garcia's was an egregious act of misbehavior. It wasn't just a club slam, which I think is pretty common on the PGA Tour or major championships. He was also beating the water cooler on the second hole as well. He's had other temper tantrums throughout his career, throwing a fit into a bunker, mutilating a rake. Like, that's the sort of thing. Maybe decapitating a club. Those are the sort of acts of misbehavior that I think should be falling under this policy. So if you're trying to narc on the players on social media, please find something better to do.
Speaking of a two-stroke penalty.
Yes.
Garrick Higo.
We have not seen this wreck since David Lipsky in 2019. But Garrick Higo was supposed to tee off at 7:18 a.m. Eastern time alongside Sean McKeel and Michael Brennan. Garrick Higo showed up at the first tee at 7:19, 1 minute late, receiving a two-shot penalty. I thought afterward there was a complete lack of accountability and responsibility in how he addressed this. He was clearly late. Sean McKeel had already hit his shot down the opening hole while Garrick Higo was making his way to the tee. You need to be there. You need to be in the defined area as determined by the PGA Rules Committee at the exact starting time. That'll be 7:18:00. Garrick Higo was not, and thus he was docked two shot penalty. Actually did well just to shoot one under par.
It was such a surreal episode, and they were just doing kind of a Zapruder film breakdown on ESPN, kind of frame by frame, exactly when he walked on the tee, and it looks closer to 10 seconds that he was late. There has to be a cutoff. I understand that. It could be 1 second, it could be 10 seconds, it could be 10 minutes. It doesn't matter. There has to be some sort of cutoff. That part I understand. I actually spoke with Sean McKeel, who said that he had just been introduced. Sean McKeel hit first out of that group, and he was stepping to the tee and turned around and saw Higo walking onto the tee. He didn't realize anything was going on until Sean McKeel. He has Higo's card as his playing companion, and as he's walking off the tee, the official says, add two. And McKeel's reaction was, add two to what? Like, I don't understand what you're telling me here. So it was a very interesting day. I will say that there has to be some sort of cutoff. I understand this is a rule.
I wouldn't have been late if I knew I was running late. That is an all-time quote from Garrick Higo, who admittedly said he was a little bit too casual.
He was. If you go back and watch that film, he is in no hurry to get from the putting green. And he knew at that point, he had heard that, his group is being announced. I probably need to hustle down the hill. It's not that far from the putting green down to the first tee. I will say, I feel like two strokes in that case is a little much. I feel like that's a bit of a stringent, maybe a little bit too penal for what that was. That was 10 minutes.
You have one job. It's to get to the tee on time.
And I'm not absolving him of responsibility or anyone else of responsibility. I just feel like two's a lot. Maybe one's a better option in my mind.
I mean, had he been more than 5 minutes late, we've seen that happen.
He would have been disqualified.
He would have been
and I'm fine with that.
Disqualified. I mean, apparently his caddy was yelling at him to get down there. It seems like Garrick Higo deserved it. I'm fine with two shots. You have one responsibility as a player. It is to show up on time in an area, at least by the tee. I don't think that is that egregious at all. All right, let's wrap up this mini podcast. So something that you're most looking forward to seeing on Friday.
I want to see if Rory can turn things around. He's going to have to play well. He's going to have to do something to get himself back in contention, and that's something is drive the ball better. And it's always it's always odd when you hear Rory McIlroy, of all people, talk about he hasn't driven the ball well all season long. Keep in mind, he is the Masters champion, so he must have done something.
Didn't drive it well there. Remember, statistically, he's one of the last in driving accuracy.
You're right. So you wonder if he's able to turn that around. And then Scottie Scheffler, like, this seems like if he can get off to this good start after what we've seen out of him this season, this could feel like by this time tomorrow afternoon, we're having this conversation, a coronation.
Yeah, look, you look at his four major championship victories that he has, three of the four, he was at least the 36-hole co-leader at this point in the golf tournament. So this is the first time in Scottie's career that he is actually sharing the lead at the opening rounds. That's certainly an ominous statistic for the rest of the field. I think I'm most curious to see Jordan Spieth. I think a lot of people have dismissed his chances at all of completing the career Grand Slam. It would obviously be a great storyline. I feel like I've written the same blog every single year since it was available to him in 2017. Had it going, was tied the lead at 300, made a couple late bogeys, ended up shooting 69. But that would be something for Jordan Spieth just to get himself in the mix heading into the weekend. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Joe podcast with Rex and Lav. We are going to have another edition of the Live From with Rex and Lav newsletter. Wherever it is you get your newsletters, make sure you sign up at golfchannel.com/Rex and Lav. Another one will be dropping on Saturday morning in your inboxes. Meanwhile, Rex and I will be back on Friday night for another mini pod and keeping the rhythm going here at Wyoming. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Friday night.
He had one job to do. I don't get it.
One job, to show up on time.